Need my clicker. I want my clicker. I don't know. I kind of have to get these days. You know, I mean, really, have to wait on them. See, they control the sermon. That's what's scary, is that they control the whole thing. And it's like they have me at their bid and beckon. I can't do anything without them. Speaking of which, we're talking about Satan tonight. And it'll be 3 o'clock in the morning and someone will go, oh, yeah. There's some sermons that are not the most exciting ones to preach. I don't really like to preach on hell, but it is something we have to talk about once in a while. And Satan's not really at the top of my list because he's not really a very nice person. But we need to know about him, and he is an important subject because in reality he is why we're here today, because of what he has done to us and all of the world. And so it's kind of like what Patton said about Rama. We need to know our enemy. We need to know who he is and what he is and what he's able to do and what he's not able to do. Gerald Tracy said that the devil's cleverest wile is to make men believe that he does not exist. The subject of Satan is important because the Bible mentions him. And it is important because we need to understand who he is and what he is doing, what he is able to do. Sadly, though, there's a lot that we just don't know about Satan, and we'll see why that is because what we know about him actually is only revealed in Scripture. If one believes in the truth of the Bible, Dennis Ruchman said, it is impossible to doubt the reality of the devil for a single moment. And because he is a very real entity, he is something and someone that we need to appreciate, if we can say it that way. We need to acknowledge, we need to understand that when we talk about Satan, that he is very real. Peter says that he is like a lion that goes about seeking whom he may devour. There is a need of sobriety. There is a need of vigilance. Peter calls him an adversary, and recognizing that he is somebody who is not looking out for our best interest. He is someone who is trying to destroy really who we are and what we are, and that he has the power of a lion, a lion that is going to destroy, a lion that is rather sneaky. We think about lions, and I know he's been in the news, but you know, when we talk about the lion, the devil being a lion, a roaring lion, he is not somebody who goes around all the time roaring every moment so that we can know where he is. As I understand, the way lions work is that they really don't make a lot of noise. They crouch and they look upon their prey and they stalk their prey for a long time before they are close enough and they are in a position that they can attack. And that when they attack, they roar so as to freeze their victim with fear. And while the victim is frozen with fear, the lion pounces and destroys. And that would sound a lot, of course, like Satan as to why Peter would call him a lion. Because we think of Satan, you know, well, he's this guy in a red suit with horns on his head and a forked tail, and he's got the pitchfork, and that's Satan. Well, that came from, I think, the medieval times when people are trying to, you know, figure out. And I guess it does represent to the point of saying, well, he represents what's evil, he represents what's bad. But I got to tell you, if we think the devil looks like that, we are sadly mistaken. The devil doesn't come into us and say, boo, I'm the devil, and here I am. The reality of it is Satan presents himself, as we will see, as even an angel of light. Satan doesn't come out and let everybody know, hey, I'm here. As a matter of fact, if anybody walks in and then they got a devil suit on, you can be assured that's not the devil, because he doesn't look like that. He's not going to act like that. He's very subtle and he's very, very dangerous. Well, we need to look at the questions about who is he and what is he, where did he come from, and what can we know about him? Well, we have to acknowledge, while a lot of people maybe in the world don't want to do that, He is something that is real. He is not mythical. He is not something that, you know, man has just created because of some Freudian view about dealing with the things of life and the bad things. Because if you believe in Jesus, interesting statement, if you believe in Jesus, you got to believe in Satan. And that's because Jesus said that He was real. In Matthew chapter 12 and verse 25, Jesus says that every kingdom, now they had accused Him of casting out demons by Beelzebub, we'll see that, but Jesus responds to them and says that every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, every city or house divided against itself will not stand. And if Satan cast out Satan, he's divided against himself. And how then will his kingdom stand? And if I cast out demons by Beelzebub, by whom do your sons cast them out? Therefore they will be your judges. But if I cast out demons by the Spirit of God, surely the kingdom of God has come upon you. No one, or how can one enter a strong man's house and plunder his goods unless he first binds the strong man, and then he will plunder his house. And he who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters abroad. Now we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about this blasphemy that they have made about Jesus, that in His miracles, as He is, they have brought demon-possessed people there, if you look back at verse 22, blind people and mute people, and He heals them. Well, you know, the people, the common people are saying, well, this must be the Son of David. The Pharisees, the religious elite, all these really smart people, they say, well, this fellow doesn't cast out demons, but you get into that Beelzebub language and it gets your tongue all kind of wrapped around. They accuse Jesus of casting out demons by Beelzebub, the prince of the devil. I mean, and that is incredibly, narrow-minded from these Pharisees. They're in effect saying that what Jesus is doing is He is doing the work of Satan. Now that is the blasphemy of the Holy Spirit. I mean, that is the most, blasphemous thing. You could assume that you're standing there and you're watching Jesus cast out demons from people, watching Jesus heal these people, and you're thinking, well, He's doing it by the power of the devil. I mean, that is just incredulous. That is just unbelievable that you would consider that. And the argument that Jesus makes is that that doesn't make any sense. That if I'm casting out devils by Beelzebub, then what I'm doing is that I'm Satan, and I'm putting the demons in there to possess the man and to cause agony and pain, and then I'm going to turn around and cast them all out. I mean, that doesn't make a bit of sense. The kingdom is going to be divided against itself. I mean, Satan is going to be cast against himself. Satan's not going to cast out Satan. I tell you, that shows us a little bit of the motivation of Satan. He is not doing that. He's not going to cast himself out. He wants that to be there, and he'll be divided. And of course, Jesus is telling them that I'm doing it by the finger of God. I think it's one of the neat things of when we talk about the Holy Spirit that Jesus calls Him the finger of God. But He says, I'm doing that by the power of God. But verse 29 is really key to understanding this relationship between Jesus and Satan. He says, remember, He says, how can one enter a strong man's house and plunder his goods unless he first binds the strong man? Well, the house that He's talking about is the world, and the strong man is Satan, and the one who's coming in is Jesus. Jesus has come into the world to plunder the house of Satan, as it was. And He's going to plunder his goods. But Jesus says, you don't go in and plunder a man's house unless you first tie him up. And you bind him so he doesn't rise up against you. And so what Jesus is saying about His mission is, He has come into the world of Satan and He is going to bind him and then He's going to plunder his house. And oh my, did he plunder. But the point of it is, Satan is as real, and this just sounds weird to say, Satan is as real as Jesus, because Jesus says he's real. He's not something that's mythological. He's not somebody that, you know, is made up by man. And then, of course, the Apostle Paul and others, we're just looking at a few in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 11, we put the whole armor of God on. Why? That we can withstand against the wiles of the devil. So he's real. I mean, he is something that we need to recognize is not just a childhood story to scare us into, if you don't do that, the devil's going to come get you, you know. That's not really good parenting. But he's not just something that is a figure. He is extremely real. He's extremely powerful. He is somebody that we've got to acknowledge about who he is. And I think it's interesting that he is not mentioned in the first two chapters of the Bible and is not mentioned in the last two. He's not the bookends. And what that tells us in some ways is the fact that, you know, what we know about the Satan is the fact that he is in the Bible. But the reality of it is we don't know a lot about him because it's not about him. The Bible is not a thesis upon Satan. He is an integral part of it because he is introduced there. In Genesis chapter 3, when we find that the serpent is more subtle than any creature of the field, do you realize that we don't know who that is until Revelation? Well, I mean, we know who it is. He is not identified until Revelation chapter 12 and verse 9. Because he is called the serpent of old. And so when we look at Genesis 3, we immediately say, well, when Satan said that, in reality, he is not identified until Revelation chapter 12. But it is his influence upon those pages, of course, of God's Word that he has destroyed the world as it was in the days of Noah. And when God, it seems to be that everything that God created, Satan destroyed. Think about this for a moment. God created a perfect world. He put man and woman in the garden. You know what Satan said? I can destroy that. And he did. He came in, caused the woman to take of the fruit. She gave it to the man, and they sinned. And so, you know, Satan said, hey, I got one. It's one to nothing, Satan. And then the world was created, and so he got a hold of it, and he destroyed the whole world save eight. All right, two to nothing, you know, there's Satan. And then God forms the nation of Israel. Everything that God creates, Satan is going to destroy. And so God creates the nation of Israel. And Satan gets a hold of it, and he destroys that. Well, it's three to nothing. But there's something going on about the garden and the early world and the nation of Israel, because in the garden, God mentioned something about a seed and about a bruising and all of that that's going to go on. And then when he made the promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, he talked about a seed promise that was going to come. I'm going to give you some land. I'm going to give you a nation. But let me give you a seed promise. And even with the nation of Israel, with those tribes being divided up, that there was a seed promise that was going to be gone. So you've got the Garden of Eden. Satan destroyed, you know, he came and affected that. And then he came and affected the world. And then he came and affected the nation of Israel. His whole mission was to destroy everything that God created. And then he got real excited because Jesus, the Son of God, came in the flesh. And then he went and tempted Jesus. He did it with the same thing he did with Eve. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. The problem was it didn't work. Jesus didn't fall prey to it. But then Satan says to himself, well, I know what I can do. I can kill him because he's now a man. He's a human being. And so he kills him. And so when Jesus dies on the cross, as an old preacher said long ago, he said, man, the devil was a dance in the jig. Because think about that. The Son of God was in the flesh, killed, and they put him in the tomb. Four to nothing. Satan. That's all he wants to do is to destroy and to mess up everything that God has made. And then the first day of the week came. And Satan got a big surprise. Because now Jesus is risen from the dead. And it's not four to nothing. It's nothing. Because now God has shown his power over Satan. So that's why he is an integral part of this whole process of even our story of redemption, is because he has been shown to be an adversary. He has been shown, as John tells us, that Jesus came into the world to destroy the works of Satan. That's all he is. He is a liar. He is one who is going to destroy everything that God has created. But he met his match and more when Jesus arose from the dead, because that's where our salvation came. And that's why we have the victory over death. We have the victory over Hades. But here's the best part. We've got victory over Satan. We're talking about somebody tonight that really has been defeated. We're talking about someone that is great and powerful. But that's not what we need to be concerned about, because he's not really got that much power anymore, because Jesus has taken care of that. The only information we have about him is in the Bible, yet it's not really about him. And I know that, you know, we can see inferences of him throughout it. But, you know, if you want to get technical, and I stayed up one night very, very late, counting every time, not really, in a computer, you can do this really quick. But, you know, in 55 times, mostly in Job, we know what that book's about. You know, and he's called the devil 35 times, but he's only called that in the New Testament. He's got a lot of different kind of names. I mean, you look at all the different terms that is found. You can find this in Knave's Topical Bible. But notice that all of these terms refer to what his character is. Abaddon, an accuser of our brethren. He is an adversary. He is the angel of the bottomless pit. He is Apollyon. He is Beelzebub, Belial, the devil. He is our enemy. He is an evil spirit, the father of lies. He is the gates of hell. The great red dragon, Revelation calls him, he is a liar, he is a lying spirit, a murderer, he is the old serpent, the power of darkness, the prince of this world, the prince of devils, the prince of the power of this world, the prince of the power of the air, the ruler of the darkness of this world. He is called Satan, serpent, spirit that works in the children of disobedience, the tempter, the god of this world, unclean spirit, and wicked one. That's who he is. I hate him. He is a troubler. He is an adversary. And the very idea of being an adversary is the fact that that's exactly what he does. You know, you go to the book of Job in that familiar passage about when God is God is there with, the sons of men have come to present themselves, I should say. And Satan, I don't quite understand all of this picture when you got God there, and there's Satan, and he's coming, but it's the story. In verse 6, that when there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. And the Lord said to Satan, "Where do you come?" This ought to make us aware of who he is. Satan answered to the Lord and said, "Well, from going to and from the earth and walking back and forth on it." And the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? It's not like him on the earth, blameless, upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil." Satan answered, said, "Well, does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge around him, around his household, and around all that he has on every side? You bless the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in this land. But I tell you what, if you stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." And the Lord said, "Well, you go do that and see what happens." Well, it didn't happen. Of course, he took everything he had from him, including his children and his property and all that. In chapter 2 and verse 1, again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. The Lord said to Satan, "Where you come from?" Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro from the earth, walking back and forth." The Lord said, "Have you considered my servant Job? There's none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil. And still he holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without cause." And Satan answered the Lord and said, "Skin for skin. Yes, all that a man has he will give for his life. But you stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you and your face." And God allowed that to happen, save not killing him. Being an adversary means that there is nothing that he is looking for our good. And you think about what the whole mission of Satan is. There is nothing, literally nothing, in his total existence that is of any value and of any worth. There is no good whatsoever in him. And his whole purpose is that he has got your picture and my picture right up there in front of him, and he is trying to do everything he can to take us to hell with him. We have to understand who he is and what he is. He is not a cartoon. He is not a fantasy figure. He is somebody that is the worst thing that we can ever imagine, because he is trying to do exactly that. He will bring misery upon our lives. He will bring those things upon us that will destroy us, because that's who and what he is. He is our adversary. And that's exactly what he did to David in 1 Chronicles 21 and verse 1. "And Satan stood up against Israel and moved David to number Israel." And David got in trouble about that. Now I know, and most of you, some of you don't know what I'm about to say, but Flip Wilson made a lot of money by telling people, "Well, the devil made me do it." Well, you know, he looked like Geraldine, but we don't even talk about that. But the devil doesn't make us do anything. That's what's sad about this whole process. We can blame Satan, yes. We need to accuse him, and we need to give reason as to why things happen. We need to put it squarely upon the responsibility and who he is, because he is our adversary. He did not make Eve take of that fruit. He doesn't make us do anything. He just tempts us and He puts us out there and He tries to instill in us this idea that we can be our own God. He is not looking out for our good. There is nothing that He is doing that has any value whatsoever. He is standing against us. And I'm going to tell you, if He went after David and if He went after all of these other fellows, He's going to come after you and I. And when we look at our lives, we need to understand we got a battle. We're at war with Satan because he is doing nothing but trying to destroy everything about us. He is real. And again, we go back to the idea that one of his greatest ploys is to convince us that he really doesn't exist. That he's really not that dangerous. That he's really not somebody we need to worry about. In the book of Zechariah, the third chapter, that's on page 832, it's in the Old Testament. This is another great vision here. We sang about Joshua. But he showed me Joshua, in Zechariah chapter 3 and verse 1, he showed me Joshua, the high priest, standing before the angel of the Lord, and Satan standing at his right hand to oppose him. And the Lord said to Satan, "The Lord rebuke you, Satan. The Lord who has chosen Jerusalem rebuke you. Is this not a brand plucked from the fire?" Now Joshua was clothed with filthy garments and was standing before the angel. And he answered and spoke to those who stood before him, saying, "Take away the filthy garments from him." And to him he said, "See, I have removed your iniquity from you, and I will clothe you with rich robes." And I said, "Let them put a clean turban on his head." So they put a clean turban on his head, and they put clothes on him, and the angel of the Lord stood by. Now what's great about that scene, and it's a messianic prophecy that's here. We've got the angel of the Lord. I love that. The angel of the Lord, we talked about him recently. The angel of the Lord, man, he encamps around us. But you got the angel of the Lord there, you've got Joshua, the high priest, and you've got Satan, and you've got the Lord himself. And you look at Joshua, and he is in filthy garbs. You know why? Because those garbs came from Satan. Now, I don't want to offend anybody, because if your favorite pet is a pig, I apologize. You know, I never could understand in Gilchrist County when they had those fair days that they'd go take those hogs. And I have witnessed it, folks. I know you probably have too. They wash them and they trim them and they blow dry their hair and they put paint on their toenails or whatever them things are called down there, and their feet. And they make these animals, well, they're still ugly. They just are pretty ugly. And I'm thinking, that is so weird. Because you know what's going to happen when they get those pigs back home, if they make it back home. You know where they're going. They're going to the hog slop and they're going to wallow in all that stuff because that's what they love. I mean, they love all that filth. They live for that filth. And that's exactly what Satan does to us, is that he wants us to live in filth. And you've got Joshua, of all people, standing there with filthy garments. And I'll tell you what's great about the blessing of God is that he says, "I'm going to make you clean." But the point not to be missed is that the reason those garments were filthy is because of Satan. I mean, we need to be clean nuts. We need to be concerned about cleanliness. And I'm talking about spiritual way. And that's who he is. That's why he is our adversary. Because he is standing at his right hand to oppose us. Everything we want to do, Satan is doing nothing but trying to oppose us in everything that we do. He's not a very nice person. And we need to understand who our enemy is. What his power is. Now, the other thing we need to know about him is that he's not Lucifer. I suspect if you ask most people in the community, who is Lucifer, they're going to tell you, well, that's the devil. No, he's not. The Bible never, ever calls Satan Lucifer. Now, Isaiah chapter 14, that's an easy one to follow because it's a big one. In Isaiah chapter 14, Lucifer is mentioned. And there down in verse 12, "How you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning, how you were cut down to the ground, you who weakened the nations." Now, a very kind lady back in Trenton told me this years ago, and I've always appreciated it, is that whenever you have a text without a context, you've got a pretext. And what that means is when you look at something and they, well, I know what that means. And what people mostly do with this is they look at it and say, well, now there's Lucifer. That means that he has fallen down from heaven. Because you remember Jesus, when the disciples came back and he said, I saw Satan fall from heaven, that they assumed that that's talking about Lucifer. Well, the context, he's not talking about Satan. The context of it is he's talking about the king of Babylon. The fact of the matter is, Lucifer was a man. He wasn't Satan. He has come down in mythology to be Lucifer, but Satan is not Lucifer. So if we're going to speak with Bible terms, brethren, let's understand that when we talk about Lucifer, we're talking about a man who died a long time ago. It's not the devil. But he's not the devil. Just thought I'd throw that in just in case you had that in your coffee, in your conversations tomorrow. But let's talk about what we know about him. Well, not a whole lot. Let's stand and sing. No, it ain't that quite bad. Colossians chapter 1. He is created. In chapter 1 and verse 15, we find that Jesus is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. By him, all things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth, visible and invisible. Notice the thrones and dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created through him and for him. Now we could go over to Ephesians chapter 6 where we remember that we are fighting against principalities and powers and dominions of all those things. But the fact of the matter is, what we understand from this passage, at least in Colossians 1, is that he has created all things, which then would assume that he is a created being. But he did not get kicked out of heaven, at least in the context. Revelation chapter 12. A common view of Satan is that, well, there was this big war and Michael, he's the good guy, and he and his angels fought, and Satan was an angel of God, and so now he rebelled against God, and God got mad at him and kicked him out of heaven. The Bible doesn't teach that. Now, let's explain what that means. Revelation chapter 12, it does say in verse 7 that the war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought, but they did not prevail, nor was the place found for them in heaven any longer. So the great dragon was cast out, the serpent of old. This is where we know that Genesis chapter 3 serpent is the devil. So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ has come. For the accuser of our brethren who accused them before our God day and night has been cast down. All right. A long time ago, there was this lady who gave me a really good quote, and she said that you've heard that part, right? Okay. A text without a context is a pretext. If you go back to chapter 12 and verse 1, this is actually the beginning of a second section in the book of Revelation. And again, I'm not suggesting that, boy, we can just go through Revelation and it's just going to be crystal clear as what it's going to be. But the problem that we have with Revelation is that we believe in it in many ways that everything is literal in it. And the context is necessary to understand what is about Revelation. In actuality, Revelation is not a difficult book to understand. The truth of it is, the most difficult book in the New Testament is Romans. If you want to chew on a big piece of steak, go get a hold of Romans. Revelation is a book of imageries. The people who understand Revelation probably better than you and I, believe it or not, are children. Because Revelation is written in a symbolic form. And when you look at the context, you have to go back to chapter 12 and verse 1. When he talks about this great sign appeared in heaven, there is a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a garland of 12 stars. Being with child, she cried out and labored in pain to give birth. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great fiery red dragon, having 7 heads, 10 horns, 7 diadems on his heads. And his tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them down to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to give birth to devour her child as soon as it was born. She bore a male child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up to God in his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness where she was she has a place prepared by God, and that they should feed her there 1,260 days. And war broke out in heaven. We don't change from symbolism into reality. We don't all of a sudden talk about a woman who is giving birth. This is talking about the victory of God over the forces of evil. Not a literal battle that takes place in heaven between Satan and his angels and the angels of the Lord. What we have here is an imagery. We have if I can use this term, spiritual cartoons that don't need to be mistaken for reality that this war is going on. Because what we're talking about is the victory of God over these forces of evil. What Satan is trying to do is to destroy the works of Jesus. We see the imagery of the woman, the faithful of God. There's sort of a side imagery. You can think about what happened when Mary was giving birth to Jesus. What happened? Well, Herod sent his troops into Bethlehem to kill the child. Who do you think was behind all that? It wasn't Herod. Wasn't Herod's idea, hey, I think I'm going to go kill a bunch of babies and see if I can kill this child. I'm going to tell you, it was Satan who was trying to do it. He knew who that baby was. Satan knew what was happening there in Bethlehem in that manger. And he sent Herod's troops in there to kill him. And there's a side application of that. But the reality of it is, this is the people of God who are being tormented by the forces of Satan, and this imagery of this woman and the child and the dragon and this great battle that's going on, because then it continues after it describes this scene of the war in heaven and Satan being thrown out. In verse 13, that when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. Well, that's what Satan did to the church. In the early church, he persecuted the church. He's still persecuting the church. All of that is to say that when you have the radiant woman and the red dragon and their adventures, these are symbolic to show the war between righteousness and unrighteousness. I mean, the apostle, if I can read a quote, to introduce confusion into the interpretation to suppose that the apostle suddenly shifts from symbolism to reality when he tells of the war in heaven, that's not the context. Now, it's a fanciful story to talk about how that when you connect some of the supposed dots, that yes, there's this great war in heaven, but there's no basis for it. Was Satan created? As far as we know, he was. When was he created? I have no idea. Why? Because the Bible doesn't tell me. The thing about Satan is the only thing we know about him is in the Bible. There is no other revelation of him. There is no other knowledge of him. And, of course, we understand that the Bible really isn't about him. But the fact of the matter is, that's not what we learn about. We just know that he was created. He is this force that is against the Lord. To see that in this great conflict, that Satan in this chapter, in chapter 12, the fact of the matter is, Satan is defeated. He is cast down from his high-handed control over men, because what we've got in Jesus Christ is he is powerful. Okay, we got that. Matthew chapter 4. Don't miss the point that when we talk about Satan, he is not somebody we can just casually come up to. We got to understand his great power. Matthew chapter 4 and verse 8, and again, the devil took him on an exceedingly high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he says to him, all these I will give you. He could do it. That was not just a random thing he was saying. Satan has the power. He is powerful. He is somebody to reckon with. But he's not all powerful. And see, first of all, we found in Job that he said, well, that's not fair, Lord. He's such a whiner. It's not fair, Lord. You got Job and you got a hedge around him. He said, that's right. Got a hedge around him because he's my man. I like that part because he's got a big hedge around me, but he's got a hedge around us. Because God is not going to allow us to be tempted. What we are, and he protected him. And so God allowed Satan to do what he did to Job in the first series. God allowed that. But it still didn't shake the faith of Job. And then God allowed Satan. The only reason these things happened to Job is because God allowed it. Satan is powerful, but he is limited in his power. He is not omniscient, omnipotent. He He is limited. Because in Ephesians chapter 6 and in verse 11, get this part. What about verse 10? Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Put on the whole armor of God, that we can withstand the wiles of the devil. Now, here's what we need to see about what we're dealing with. This verse 12 is scary. We don't wrestle against flesh and blood. We wrestle against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against the spiritual host of wickedness in the heavenly places. I'm going to tell you, that will scare the benittles out of us to understand that's what we wake up to every morning. And we got to go fight all of these things in every day and every day of our existence. We have got to go fight against the principalities and the powers and the rulers of the darkness of this age and the spiritual host of wickedness. I mean, we have just got it all coming at us right there. But we can defeat him, because if we take up the whole armor of God, we can withstand in the evil day. And when we take the shield of faith, verse 16, we will be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked one. We can beat him, because he's defeated. He has no power. He is limited. The one thing that Satan hates is a bowed knee. Oh, Satan don't want us to pray. Because we can make him flee from us. We can resist the devil and he will flee. We have got the power over him. Why? Because the first day of the week. You know what's special about today? This is the 2000 blah, 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 blah anniversary of the Waterloo for him who is called Satan. Because 2000 years ago, on the first day of the week, early in the morning, Jesus rose from the dead. And when he did exactly what was prophesied in Genesis chapter 3, is that he stepped on that old snake's head and went, oh! And I like that part. I hate snakes. And he bruised the head of Satan. And he took care of business. And so we have the power to overcome him. We have the power to know that we can defeat him. He's got a lot of power in him, and he's got a lot of things that he's going to do to us. But we can defeat him, and we can overcome him. A story is told about a missionary that returned to his home in Africa. My nightmare. Walks in the door, and there's this huge python inside. He runs back to his truck and got his 45 caliber pistol. I'd have had the howitzer, but he ran back to his truck and got his 45 caliber pistol, and he went into his home and he carefully entered through the door. And the man aimed with precision and fired a single shot into the snake's head. It was a mortal blow to this old reptile. But he didn't die instantly. The missionary retreated from his house as the snake thrashed violently. The tremendous power of the snake's movement broke and damaged many items within the home. After the house finally became silent, he slowly entered the house to find the snake dead. The interior of the house was destroyed. It was a disaster, as the snake had unleashed all of its fury in those moments of death. But now there was peace. Satan received a fatal shot to his head when Christ conquered sin and death. Now he writhes in pain in his defeat, and he is unleashing a few remaining destructive blows. He seems dangerous, but his fate is sealed. In Matthew 28:5, when Jesus depicts the end of the world and the judgment scene, he says that all those who are unrighteous will go to hell, which is prepared for the devil and his angels. Do we not recognize that hell is not a place for you and I? We're not supposed to be there. God didn't make hell for you, and he didn't make it for me. He made it for Satan. He made it before the world was even created. But what he did is that he proved the adversary character of Satan, and he's got proof. And when the judgment day comes, he's going to send the devil and his angels to hell. And Satan knows that. He understands that. And he is thrashing about and taking everybody he can with him. But he doesn't need to take me. And he doesn't need to take you. Because God, in his infinite mercy and love, will not allow us. This is the message of our victory over Satan. There is no temptation but such as common to man. There is nothing that happens to any of us that is unusual in the history of the world, because we all have the same afflictions. We have the same thing. He uses the same plan, the lust of the flesh, the three ugly sisters. God will not allow us to be tempted. No temptation has overtaken us except such as common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow me to be tempted beyond what I am able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that I am able to bear it. There is a sense of a reality that there is the answer, that I can live a sinless life. And the reason that I sin is because I don't take God's offer of escape. And that's because I want what I want, and I'm tempted, and I do it anyway, and that's why we sin. But I'm going to tell you, it doesn't need to be. And there is nobody that needs to go to hell because of this person, Satan, because God is not going to allow us to be tempted, but we're going to run headlong into him and think he's our buddy. He's not. He is our adversary. But God has given us his Son that we can be released from him. As the kids used to say, we could look at Satan and say, talk to the hand. He is nothing. He has no power over my life. He has no victory in my life, because I do not want to be defeated by what he has given in this world. He is the worst thing that we could ever imagine, but we've got victory over Jesus Christ. But we need to know who he is, and we need to know how he works in our life. And we need to defeat him. And I tell you, sometimes you might want to do it with tinted windows, but we need to go down the road and just tell Satan what we think of him. Just tell him what you think of him. And that's the story of Satan, our adversary. But you see, our story doesn't end there. Our story is about Jesus Christ. Satan and Jesus knew one another before creation. Jesus came, and he became like you and me so that he could die on a cross and be resurrected by the power of God so that he could defeat Satan. And God be thanked he did. But do not let him have victory over our lives, being his children. If you're not a Christian, he's got you right there. If you're not a child of God, he's got you right where he wants you. And if you don't change your life, you're going to hell. If you don't obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, you're going to hell. What the Bible says. And Satan is going to be happy because he has destroyed you from the presence of God. But tonight you can have the victory over Satan. You know, the thing about obeying the gospel of Jesus Christ is not only the fact you get to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, you get to have victory over Satan. You need to just step on his head and say, you will not have power over me tonight. And if you come confessing Jesus Christ as the Son of God, you can put your foot on his head and say, you will not have victory over me anymore. Be baptized into water, rise up in the newness of life. You can be God's child, and you can live victoriously, and he will go to hell, and you'll go to heaven. That's the good news about Jesus Christ. We bid you come, as together we stand, as we sing.